And I'll warn you that there's going to be a lot of up-downs today. Because we're going to be sharing, some of us siblings, we're going to be sharing about our time growing up in this church. And I was given the privilege of being the first one to do that. My name is Seth. I'm the fifth of the six Bjornerud kids. And as I was thinking about what to share, Jesus said one time to his disciples, "In my house there are many rooms." And in this church there are many rooms too, as I was thinking about it. And even as I look around at some of the different rooms and spaces in this church, I think that there were important memories for me in those places. I suppose it starts in the nursery room, where there was lots of games and videos and flannel graph Bible lessons. And that was back in the time when you could see to upstairs because the floor didn't go all the way upstairs. There was that, it was like a hallway upstairs. And then, of course, the library room is an awesome room for me because I wore out those VHSs, especially the ones that had the greatest adventure stories from the Bible. And I'd check those out all the time. Or the BBC version of the Chronicles of Narnia, watching those like crazy. It was in there that I discovered the short little cartoon called Pilgrim's Progress, which ended up becoming my favorite book of all time. And now I have like six different copies of that book in my office. And then, you know, you work on your way on up to the second level when you're old enough, and the teen room coffee bar kind of area, where especially remember having Sunday school up there with Tim Blomberg. And actually, I remember less about what happened in there and when we would get the opportunity to finish our lesson early and walk on down to the bridge and throw rocks into the water. Or if we'd build Tim up for weeks to the point where eventually he'd give in and we'd go to Four Corners and he'd get us milkshakes. And, I suppose you guys knew that, right, Mom and Dad? Have we gone for milkshakes? Okay. But there was a Sunday school, classrooms. But, you know, this church encompasses more rooms than just that because, you know, there's, in my life, there are the important places like Storybook Camp where I was baptized. And there are places like Deeper Life Bible Camp, which this church has been so active in, where I've grown so much in the Lord, and that's especially a place that I think where I surrendered the direction of my life to the Lord at camp. And you guys put me up on the stage to work out my chops as a worship leader way before I was ready. And I was like, and sometimes I think about how many mistakes I made when I did that. I was terrible. I mean, not like not even the music part, but I had just a wrong attitude and a wrong heart so many times, and we made so many mistakes when it comes to the is it worship, is it performance thing. But you guys let me go through all of that. And sometimes people say that when you know that I must have been treated differently because I was a pastor's kid in this church. And I never really felt like I was treated any differently. I felt like you guys did an awesome job of raising me up just like I was one of the other kids. And sometimes that meant you had to kick me out of the Sunday school class. Teresa, like, that was good. I needed it. So that was really good. And so you guys treated me just like I was any of the other kids, and so more than just that there are many rooms in here or all that stuff, the most thing I appreciate most is that you just, guys just gave me room to grow. And I think, you know, when you think about growing, you think about gardening, that's what it's about. You don't just tell something to grow and it grows. But what you do is you provide an environment for something to grow in. You provide an environment that's rich, and but you also, in doing that, you're just giving things freedom to grow as they're supposed to grow. And sometimes they make mistakes, but through it all, eventually we learn our lessons and we grow. And I really appreciate that about you guys. And so it's more than just the rooms; it's the people in the room that you gave me to grow. And at this time, I'm living up in International Falls. I'm the youth and worship pastor at the Covenant Church there, and I'm really hoping that they're doing okay this morning without me. But it's many of those same lessons that I took from here are some of the things that I'm trying to instill in the youth up there. And anytime if I get frustrated with any of those kids, I remember I was way worse than that. And so, just by being faithful, just by continuing to love kids, continuing, especially the older generation, when you show interest in the younger people in the church, many of those lessons and those things that you do for the younger people, they don't sink in until we grow up to be about my age. And then we realize, wow, we had some really awesome people who let me sit in their kitchen counter and talk about faith and bring out baked goods for us to enjoy. And so I want to thank you for all of that. And I'm going to have you guys stand again. We're going to sing another song.
So Seth says he got the privilege to go first. I think he made the order, and so he got first dibs at all the stealing all the material here. So I might have to cross some things out. But like Seth was talking about, definitely think about all of this 40 years. I've been around for most of them, not quite there to the full 40 years. And the memories, like, I start to think back. Been thinking over the last several weeks, and then actually this morning decided to try to write them down so I don't forget once I stand up here. But like Seth was saying, I remember when the balcony was a bridge and it was open in the middle. We were having a potluck afterwards, and I remember it was always fun and a little dangerous because, well, the tables were set up and the potluck was going, we could play catch over the middle until either somebody noticed or somebody threw the ball short, and then that ended shortly. I remember right over here in the pews, a lot of you were here and may remember Tim Scott when he was very little, falling asleep and snoring so incredibly loud. I think the wooden pews kind of amplified it. That stuck in my head. Building forts outside after church, whether it was off in this direction, and I think it's still there, but it seemed a lot bigger before. The rock that's right by the driveway with the trees around it. Like, that was giant, but apparently some rocks shrink over time. Or going off into the swamps here. And I don't know if they were ever meant to be used, but I know we found a lot of lumber that worked good for bridges across the really wet spots. So sorry if that was supposed to be used for something else. And I think the forts over here, we got pretty far back, and I think that played a little bit into when me and Lynn got forgotten here on Easter one Easter Sunday. I think I remember walking out of the woods and seeing the parking lot empty and realizing something went wrong here. And I know you said you guys had to work really hard to go get milkshakes with Tim. I don't remember us having to work that hard when it was my age group. And it seemed more than just like every couple months. I think we had class there several times. Or I do remember, I think, Verna, you had taken us a couple times to Laurentian Divide in the summer. that was a blast. I think a couple of us got lost up there once too. But we all made it back. And, you know, with a lot of that, you know, it comes to mind of it takes a village. And I know for our family and for all the families in here can probably relate to this, that this is a village that raises everybody. In those memories are, except mentioned the hallway that was in the back that looked up in the window going from the nursery. I remember one Sunday, I'm sure it was more than one, but I remember one in particular, is the door just isn't good enough, and I was climbing through the window into the back hallway, and I was halfway through, and I heard Ophie's voice, and she was somewhere over here, but that door happened to be open, and she saw me going through that window, and I knew I was in trouble, because I knew that there were several people in this church that had not just the given authority, but the responsibility from my parents to hold me accountable and to discipline me appropriately. And I'm grateful for that, because was able to grow up knowing, I don't know, there's a lot of people that cared for me, even if that meant that I might get spanked for crawling through a window by my neighbor. But it was a good thing, and that there was a lot of people that took a part in raising us. And I don't think that's unique to our family because we're the pastor's kids. That was unique to this community and this village. At our church, our pastor has kind of developed this thing he likes to use to help define what the church should be. He likes to use tacos for this, but I think it's a little more fitting if we use hot dish, and how hot dish relates to the church and kind of a multiple choice, figuring out what's the correct way to think about this. So there's A, the church is where you eat the hot dish. Option B, you eat the hot dish after church. Or there's option C, the church eats the hot dish. And this has always been a church that eats the hot dish. It's not, there's tons of memories with this building, with things we've done, but it's all because of the people. And even outside of here, so yeah. Thank you for being a church that eats the hot dish.
So this is where they're all going to leave me here by myself. You understand?
Okay, good.
All right. Well, I'm Lynn, and I'm 38 years old, and so that means that in many ways my life has paralleled this church, right? It's 40. In fact, I think the summer this building was built was 1981. Is that right? So this was just getting built the summer I was born. So I can honestly say that all of my life growing up was here. And so because of that, there's a lot of stories I can share of every phase growing up and things that happened here. You know, from waddling across the field when I was just a tot to visit with Verna while she baked. I like to do that. When I was a little bit older, I would suggest eagerly to my mother that we should probably borrow a couple eggs or some sugar from the Godwins, because I knew that I would come home with some Little Debbies for my trouble. So we borrowed a lot of stuff from Ophelia. And then even as I grew a little bit older, having Al Soxman pull up in his squad car to make sure that we weren't getting into any trouble on the streets of Babbitt, you know. So a lot of stories. The common thread, I think, was that I think this church's biggest impact on my life wasn't necessarily the things that happened inside this building. There was plenty of those, and as my brothers have shared, there was a lot of memories inside this building. But I have so many outside this building, and it was outside of the building where we lived life, right? We were here on Sundays and other nights for activities, but the majority of our life is outside of these walls. And so to me, that was where the impact was. And it was with those people that we made community with Monday through Saturday, not just on Sundays. And so, to me, that's what makes, what made and continues to make this a strong body is what everybody does when they leave this building. And so, my dad, as everyone knows, is partial to illustrations in his sermons. So, I thought I'd better use an illustration so that he can be sure he taught me something here. I'm going to use an illustration, and it's one of the key reasons that I think that 40 years later, my parents are still right here. And so it's been 20 years since I left home, which is crazy to think about, because now when I visit as a guest, which is kind of a weird thing to think about. But I see a lot that's changed, but I also see a lot that hasn't changed. And similarly, when I pull into my parents' driveway when we're visiting for a holiday, I see these 30-foot tall, big, strong trees, and it's really interesting because these are the same trees that when I was a kid I used to jump over, and my dad would have to tell me not to drive over them with the mower, many of which we planted for, I think, 10 cents a tree run in the field. So what's interesting is that these are the same trees that stand there today, yet they aren't. They look much different. They've lost branches, they've grown new ones, they've weathered storms, and some limbs that were small and frail have now grown into big, important parts of the tree. And so I think there's a parallel to this church, and that when I come back as a guest, things look a lot different, but there's also things that are the same. There's branches that have come and gone. There's branches that were once small that are now big, important parts of what makes this all work. And so I think that most importantly, though, the roots are still in good soil. And there are many of you in this building right now that I know, but many that I don't. And it's a real benefit to have some of those people that were here at the beginning that are still an important part of this church. And I think that's part of what makes this work, and I don't think that happens by just hiding out in this building. I think that happened by what you all did in the communities around you, how you treated the people out in the community, how you are integrated. These walls are not a clique, it's not a closed group. And so, as you look forward to the next 40 years, I encourage you to continue to invest in your neighbors. Find ways to make yourselves small and serve others in the community. And because I think that's what makes healthy roots. So thank you for taking care of me as I grew, and thank you for taking care of my parents for the last 20 years.
Hi. I was a 4-year-old sitting in the front seat of my grandparents' pickup truck 40 years ago, rolling into the frozen tundra of Embarrass, Minnesota. And I remember one of those first New Year's Eve that we were here. I don't remember if it was the first one or the second one or third. But I remember being over at our place and playing outside. It was really cold because this is embarrassing. And Brandon Sutton encouraged me that it would be totally cool for me to lick the hood ornament on our station wagon, which I did. And I stayed attached to it for quite a while till I got scared enough to rip it off. And I'm still scarred. I won't show it to you. But I remember spending much of that New Year's Eve with my tongue in a red cup of water. That was a good memory. I too remember Mark mentioned it. One of the great things about growing up in this church family was on Sunday, a lot of us didn't go home. After church, we went to other homes and stuff, which is why, as we were sitting down for our Easter dinner that afternoon, and we noticed there were a couple missing, we asked around the table, "Hey, do you know where they went? Did they go to Jackson's? Did they go to so-and-so's? Did they go to so-and-so's?" Nobody had been asked for permission for them to go anywhere. Made a few phone calls, and then realized they weren't anywhere. So my dad and I hopped in the car and found Mark and Lynn walking back along 135. And they didn't look too upset, so that was good. I remember lots of musicals and things like that. I got to be Moses once. I got to have a big birthmark on my face. I remember that one because that was the one where as we were practicing, all of a sudden my mom started yelling and there was a big teenage guy from the church hanging over right up there trying to grab a cable for a microphone. And she ran up there, she pulled him back by the seat of his pants and started spanking him. And he was bigger than her. It was awesome. So as you've already heard, a lot of that happened. This was a church where lots of kids got spanked. I, too, was removed from a few Sunday school classes for a variety of reasons. But I remember those Sunday school classes fondly. I remember times in youth group, you guys, as was mentioned already, this church has been so good at recognizing that every part of the body has something to contribute, etc. So getting to do so many things. There was the one time that we, as teenagers, had a great idea. Let's build a sand volleyball court in the yard at the church, which we thought would be really easy, but ended up involving some bigger equipment, etc. When we discovered there was a rock that was bigger than that one out there and had to get a tractor to pull that out. But we did it. We built it. And I think you just see two poles now. That's okay. We did it. And so there was a lot of things and a lot of really good memories. And I think my brothers and my sister, we could all attest to it, that this church is a part of our DNA now. I also remember, and this kind of leads into the next part, I remember sitting up there for youth group, and it was probably about this time of year, maybe closer to Christmas, something like that. And I remember it was about that time of year because April Seppi was going to Northwestern, and she brought some of her friends back. And I remember thinking to myself that Northwestern College has some pretty attractive young ladies, which spurred my interest, and so I went there, and I found one. So I'm grateful for that. So lots of good things happen like that. So I went to Northwestern, met Sonia, got married there, and while still in college, actually, before my junior year started, I got hired at this church in a place I'd never heard of, Burns Township near St. Francis, Minnesota. And I've been there for 24 years. I'm still trying to catch up to this guy, but he's not helping. So, but I think if you went to Living Hope Free Church, you would see a lot of similarities because, again, I think it's part of my DNA. This is what I grew up in. This is what I know. So you would see on a normal Sunday morning, you'd see teenagers doing a lot of things to help out, serve, maybe leading worship, helping with the kids' ministries, even 12, 13-year-old kids helping and just contributing because this is what I learned. This is what I know. I do have to say this, too. We meet in a small space, and so we do two services to accommodate everybody. One's at 9 and one's at 11. And so my internal sermon clock says that at about 12:15, I need to start wrapping it up. It's 11:20 right now. So if that happens, I apologize, sort of. But Warren's going to let me know when he's running out of room on the recording. So, my dad asked me to speak about community this morning because it's one of the things that's a core value of the Embarrass Free Church. And I want to take us back to the beginning with that as we think about community. Community is a group of people who come together in fellowship with the same goals, sharing the same mindset, same direction. They're going together, and community is something that we first learn about actually right at the beginning of the Scriptures in Genesis chapter 1, starting in verse 26. Then God said, "Let us make man in our image, in our likeness, and let them rule over the fish of the sea and the birds of the air, over the livestock, over all the earth, and over all the creatures that move along the ground. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. One of the first things we learn there is that God exists in community. We know, as we think about that, God the Father, God the Son, God the Spirit, living in this beautiful dance of community together. The theological word for it is perichoresis, which describes this dance where they move together and they flow together, responding to each other in love. And God created us in his image as creatures, as people who would reflect his image, which tells us right off the bat we were created for community. It's a part of what it means to be human. It's a part of what it means to be fully human. It's a longing from deep inside. In fact, as we read on in Genesis chapter 2, Genesis 2 tells us about how God created Adam, the first man, and as he was in the garden, in fellowship, in community with God, verse 18, it says, the Lord God said, it's not good for the man to be alone. I will make a helper suitable for him. So God identifies for us, not because, oops, I made a mistake, but this is something we need to realize. It's not good for us to be alone. We don't function well alone. We were all created for community, even the introverts. Do I have any other introverts in here? Raise your hand. All right, introverts, unite. Not for long, though, because we need some space. Even as introverts, we were created for community. We were created to be together. And so God created a woman and gave Adam this community. And everything was great till the end of chapter 2 and into chapter 3. And we see the fall of man as Adam and Eve chose to reject God's design for the way things are supposed to be. They chose to set themselves up as their ultimate rule and authority. They chose to step out of his design and do it their way. And one of the first things that happened as a consequence of that sin was the breaking of community. Immediately they felt shame and they started hiding from each other. They tried to hide from God. They blamed each other. They blamed God. The community that they had experienced was broken. We all are created with this desire for community, this need for community, looking for satisfaction, significance, and security, which is what we're supposed to find in God because he's the only one who can provide it. But also within that is a sense of belonging, which we find in community. And we will go to whoever or whatever makes us feel like we belong, like we're accepted, like we're loved. And we see as the story continues in Genesis chapter 12, things are running amok quite terribly. But God comes to a man named Abram. And at the beginning of Genesis 12, it says, the Lord said to Abram, leave your country, your people, and your father's household and go to the land I will show you. I will make you into a great nation. And I will bless you. I will make your name great, and you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and whoever curses you, I will curse. And all the peoples on earth will be blessed through you. Essentially, what God is saying to Abram is, I am going to take you and your family, and I am going to make you a community that I use to redeem the world, to put the world back together, to reveal myself to the world, to draw everyone back into right relationship with me. And it was a community that God wanted to do that through. Now, if you read through the Old Testament, you find out they didn't do a very good job. In fact, God keeps telling them things like, you are supposed to reach out to the orphans and the widows. You're supposed to take care of those who are poor and oppressed. You're supposed to be a shining example to the rest of the world and invite people into community with me, he says, and they become really exclusive. They start thinking that they are better than everybody else, etc., and things are just a mess. So eventually, as we know, God himself enters into our world. God becomes flesh. Jesus enters into our world. And Jesus creates a community. A community of disciples. A community of people who are committed to being with Jesus so that they can become like Jesus, so that they can do the things that Jesus would do if he was living their lives. And to do this together as a community dependent on Jesus. So just as God took the Israelites and sought to make them into a community, a redemptive community for the world, Jesus comes and he establishes a new community. Jesus' communities who are defined by his love. Jesus tells his disciples, the world will know that you're my disciples by the way that you love each other. And he says, as I have loved you, so you should love each other. In the same ways that you're experiencing my love, overflow that to each other. And it's not a set of beliefs. It's not dressing a certain way. It's not necessarily a certain code of conduct or things like that that's supposed to set us apart. What sets us apart and draws the world to Christ is we should be a community that's defined by the love that we have for God and for each other. And in fact, a true love for God overflows in love for each other. One of the writers in the New Testament says that if you say you love God but you don't love the people around you, you're a liar. You don't love God. Because anybody who truly loves God, it's evidenced in the way that they love each other. And I know that that's one thing that this church for 40 years has sought to do. You call it one another people, living out those one another's, those directives for how to love each other as Jesus communities. And so Jesus plants all of these communities all around the world that are part of his larger community, but are people who have been called to a specific time and a specific place to be his community in the surrounding community to draw people to himself. One of my favorite passages pertaining to this is in Romans chapter 12, starting in verse 9. Paul just gives bullet point after bullet point, really great instruction for how to live in community. And I actually have a note in here. I don't know when I put it here, but it says community directives with an exclamation point. He starts out saying love must be sincere. Your love for each other needs to be real. One of the things that I get to do in my role is that there are a number of younger pastors. It seems weird for me to say that right now. Younger pastors. I'm actually one of the old guys now. Get together with them. And so every so often we'll have a new pastor fresh out of college or whatever coming in, and they'll be asking all kinds of questions. And one of the things that I hear way too often is there's this terrible, terrible advice that's given to young pastors I and others are trying to break them of it. And it's this advice that says, don't get too close to the people in your congregation. Make sure all of your best friendships are outside the church. Keep a distance, put up those boundaries. To which I respond, that is the worst advice anybody could ever give you. How stupid are they? Sorry if some of you don't like that word, stupid. Because how can you encourage a group of people, a community of people to love each other if you're saying, but I'm going to keep my distance? And I get it. I get it because you know what? The truth is pastors get hurt by people in their churches over and over again. And you know what? The truth is pastors hurt the people in their churches over and over again. And guess what? The truth is, if you are going to take the risk to love somebody, you are going to get hurt. And that's the beautiful thing about it. That if we're a true Jesus community, we have sincere love for each other. And love says, I am going to be vulnerable with you. I'm going to put myself out there and I'm going to trust that you're going to take care of me. And I realize sometimes you won't. Sometimes there will be careless words. Sometimes there will be things done that are intentional or unintentional, and it's going to hurt. But I love you, I value you enough to put myself out there. And I know that there's some times that I'm going to hurt you. I tell people this a lot. There is nobody in this world who can hurt me as easily and as deeply as Sonia can. And the reason for that is because I care so much about her. You guys could say things to me and I'd laugh at it. If she says it to me, it crushes me. Why? Because of the depth of the love. It's just one of the things that goes along with that. But that's what makes it so beautiful. The good news is the highs are so much greater and more regular than the lows, which is the same way it is with the church, right? A pastor doesn't stay at a church for 40 years because he's a really great person and because it's all about him. He stays at a church for 40 years because of the community. Because all together there's this mutual, sincere love between everyone. So love must be sincere. Hate what is evil, cling to what is good. Be devoted to one another in brotherly love. Honor one another above yourselves. Never be lacking in zeal, but keep your spiritual fervor serving the Lord. Be joyful in hope, patient in affliction, faithful in prayer. Share with God's people who are in need. Practice hospitality. Bless those who persecute you. Bless and do not curse. Rejoice with those who rejoice. Mourn with those who mourn. And I know you guys have done that over the last 40 years. You've rejoiced together. You've grieved together. You've hurt each other, you've reconciled, and as you reconcile, it actually strengthens the relationships. As you grieve together, it strengthens the community. We're so afraid of doing hard things, but it's the hard things that give us strength. It's the hard things that cement our bond together and dig our roots more deeply into our commitment to follow Jesus. Live in harmony with one another. Do not be proud, but be willing to associate with people of low position. Do not be conceited. Do not repay anyone evil for evil. Be careful to do what is right in the eyes of everybody. If it is possible, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. Do not take revenge, my friends, but leave room for God's wrath, for it's written, "It is mine to avenge, I will repay," says the Lord. On the contrary, if your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he's thirsty, give him something to drink. In doing this, you will heap burning coals on his head. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. Throughout that list, all of these different directives for community, all of these different points, these things, just do this if you want to live in community, if you want to be a healthy community. But here's the truth. Any community of people who are focused on being a community will never have community. I don't know if that makes sense to you, but if our focus is just we want to be community, it'll never happen. It'll break down because the community is a group of people who are focused on something outside themselves. And at the beginning of this chapter in Romans 12, Paul lets us know what that is. The thing that binds us together, that binds you together, and makes you a community that has been together for 40 years and is stretching well beyond this little parcel of land in this little township in northern Minnesota surrounded by swamps and trees. He says, "Therefore I urge you, brothers and sisters, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as living sacrifices, holy and pleasing to God. This is your spiritual act of worship. Do not conform any longer to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you'll be able to test and approve what God's will is, his good, pleasing, and perfect will. The key is every heart focused on Jesus Christ. Every heart in response to the mercy that we've experienced because of Jesus Christ and through Jesus Christ, saying, I'm going to offer myself completely to you, God. And when you have a group of people who are committed to doing that together and to helping each other do that, you have a community that lasts for 40 years plus and is still going strong. A community that keeps growing outward as they invite people in. Believe it or not, a couple last thoughts. Don't tell anybody from my church. In Mark chapter 9, right now our church is going through a series on Mark. And it's really interesting to see Jesus developing this community, and he's starting with these 12 disciples. And one of the things that I love about Jesus' development of his community, which is so representative of what happens here, and I already referenced it a little bit, most of the disciples were teenagers. Teenage guys, probably around 15, 16, maybe some even 13 or 14. The oldest one was probably Peter, since he was married and had a job. Maybe some of the other guys were 17, but these are teenagers. So Jesus takes these teenagers and he treats them like adults and says, you have something to offer. And I'm counting on you to carry on my work. And we're often encouraged by them because they're slow learners, because they struggle, because they make lots of mistakes just like the rest of us. Jesus tells his disciples, we're going to Jerusalem, and I am going to be arrested, given over to the authorities. They are going to beat me, they're going to abuse me, they're going to kill me, and on the third day I'll rise. And that should be huge news to them. So what do his disciples do in response to that? They spend the rest of their little journey back to Capernaum arguing over which one of them is the best, which one of them is the greatest. And so Jesus asks them when they get to the house, what were you arguing about on the road? But they kept quiet because on the way they had argued about who was the greatest. Chapter 9, verse 35. Sitting down, Jesus called the 12 and said, if anyone wants to be first, he must be the very last and the servant of all. Jesus is now, over these next verses, he's communicating to them, this is what it looks like to live in my community, my kingdom. This is how we carry this out. So he took a little child and had him stand among them. Now this is important because one of the things that's great about this church, what's great about the time that we live in, is we love kids. Kids are so valuable to us. Actually, we probably elevate them to too high a status and stuff, but that's a different sermon. In Jesus' time, children were the lowest of the low. This was a culture where 1% of the population was pretty wealthy. Everyone else was poor. There was no middle class. There was no in between. And so you needed all hands on deck to try to support the family, to work whatever ways you could so that you could eat. The problem with children, like infants and toddlers, is all they do is eat. And they have to be carried around, and they don't do anything. They don't clean the house. They don't make money. They don't earn anything. And furthermore, an overwhelming percentage, I think it's like 7 out of 10 children didn't make it to the age of 16. So if you're living in this culture where you don't know if your child is actually even going to make it to adulthood, and in the meantime they're not contributing much, you try to distance yourself, you try to detach. And so children were at the low end of the system there, status-wise and rights-wise. But Jesus takes a child, a little child, And he said to them, whoever welcomes one of these little children in my name welcomes me. And whoever welcomes me does not welcome me, but the one who sent me. What Jesus is saying there is, in my kingdom, in my community, everyone matters. Everyone is significant. Everyone is important. And so I want to say to you, Embarrassed Free Church, thank you for believing that everyone matters. And don't ever forget that. That everyone matters. John speaks up. Teacher, said John, we saw a man driving out demons in your name, and we told him to stop because he was not one of us. Do not stop him, Jesus said. No one who does a miracle in my name can in the next moment say anything bad about me, for whoever is not against us is for us. I tell you the truth, anyone who gives you a cup of water in my name because you belong to Christ will certainly not lose his reward. So what's Jesus saying there? First of all, John's trying to impress Jesus. Hey, Jesus, I stood up for us. There was this other guy. He claimed to be like us doing our stuff, but he's not one of us. So I told him to knock it off. And Jesus is like, whoa. Don't exclude people. If he's with us, if he's for us, it doesn't matter if he's in this little circle. He belongs. We belong together. And he says, if anybody even just gives you a cup of water in my name, they're going to get their reward. God sees that. Now, in their culture, the most simple thing that you could do for anyone in this hot, arid climate, you were just expected to give them some water. Somebody comes by, offer them some water. You weren't even supposed to think about it. It's like the least you can do. And what Jesus is saying here is that every single good thing you do, no matter how small, it matters. How many of us, if we told our stories or learned more about our stories, would discover that we are where we are right now because of some little things that people did that nobody thought mattered? But they do. Jesus says, in my community, one of the things that we need to understand in the kingdom is every good thing you do matters, no matter how small and insignificant it seems, it matters. And I want to thank you, because for the last 40 years, you've been willing to do the little things. There are people all throughout this room who have served, who have loved, who have blessed, who have done good things that nobody else knows about. And it's had an impact that you will never comprehend on this side of resurrection. But keep doing it, because it matters. Every little prayer matters. Every smile matters. Every arm around the shoulders matters. Every time somebody vacuums in here and nobody knows about it, it matters. Every time somebody changes the toilet paper, it matters. Thank you for that. Every little thing you do matters. Keep going with that. Keep doing that, and don't ever lose sight of that. And then Jesus goes on, and he says, if anyone causes one of these little ones who believe in me to sin, it would be better for him to be thrown into the sea and a large millstone tied around his neck. If your hand causes you to sin, cut it off. It's better for you to enter life maimed than with two hands to go into hell, where the fire never goes out. And if your foot causes you to sin, cut it off. It's better for you to enter life crippled than to have 2 feet and be thrown into hell. And if your eye causes you to sin, pluck it out. It's better for you to enter the kingdom of God with one eye than to have 2 eyes and be thrown into hell, where their worm does not die and the fire is not quenched. So thank you for the last 40 years for being willing to cut things off. No, just kidding. What's Jesus saying there? There's a lot of things that really get your attention there, but what Jesus is actually saying is, just like every good thing you do matters, no matter how small and insignificant, every evil, selfish thing you do matters. There is no such thing as a small, insignificant sin. It matters. And so we need to take that seriously. Our words matter, whether they're good or they're bad. They matter. Our actions matter, whether they're good or they're bad. They matter. And I want to thank you for the last 40 years for taking that seriously, for dealing seriously with sin in your own lives, because your life affects the lives of others, because there are others who are watching you, because there are others who are affected by everything that you do, whether you realize it or not. It all matters, and Jesus says, take it seriously. So please, may you for the next 40 years continue to recognize that every little sin matters and needs to be dealt with. And then Jesus goes on and says, starts talking about salt, which I think is good because we're going to eat soon and you're smelling the food, so let's talk about it. Verse 49 says, everyone will be salted with fire. The church knows about being salted with fire. Very literally, actually. The idea of being salted with fire is that in order to purify a sacrifice that was being put on the altar to be burned, they would throw salt on it. And the idea is that through the struggles, through the trials, through the suffering, that God is making us more and more holy, more and more like Jesus. I was about 6 years old when I heard talking in our kitchen in the middle of the night. My bedroom was right next to the kitchen. And I woke up to find out that this church building that we had burned to the ground. And you remember, you see it there, the cross stood. It wasn't a church, it wasn't a community that was defeated by this, but a community that continued to fix their eyes on Jesus. Not a lot of you know this, but this area wasn't too happy about there being a church here. In fact, I remember, I think I got this right, there was a little bit of competition for the land that we're sitting on right now. Because somebody wanted this land so they could build a liquor store. And the leadership had to go through that. They had to walk through that. And every one of you has been through experiences, whether it's together as a church family, or individually with part of the church family coming alongside you, where you have suffered, where you have struggled. But because of the community of Jesus Christ, because of His work in you, it's purified you, it's made you more holy, it's made you more like Jesus. Everyone will be salted with fire. You, in the last 40 years, have been salted with fire. May you come through the next 40 years salted with fire, even more pure, more like Christ, burning brighter for Him. Then Jesus says in verse 50, salt is good, but if it loses its saltiness, how can you make it salty again? Salt is good. It brings out flavor. It enhances flavor. It's a preservative. 2,000 years ago, they would get their salt from deposits by the Dead Sea, and oftentimes it would be mixed with different minerals that looked a lot like salt. And the salt would actually wash away, but it would still look like salt, and they tried, and it would be terrible. It looked like the real thing, but it wasn't. And so what Jesus is saying is, be the real thing. Don't go through the motions. Don't look like you're a follower of Jesus Christ. Don't try to look like a Jesus community and on the inside be something completely different. Be the real thing. And for 40 years, you guys have been the real thing. You've been salt to the Iron Range, not just this community. And people are watching and waiting to see if maybe it's not the real thing. But once people are convinced it's the real thing, you know what happens? They step out and they accept that invitation to come and to be a part of the community, to find out what these people are really all about. So be the real thing. May you in the next 40 years be the real thing for an area of our world that desperately needs it. And then finally, Have salt in yourselves and be at peace with each other. What in the world does that mean? Have salt in yourselves. Have salt in yourselves was a phrase that they used to describe table fellowship. And in their culture, table fellowship was huge. We kind of know this. We kind of just intuitively recognize this. But the people who sit at your table, they're family. And in their culture, to be invited to sit at the table means you're not a stranger anymore, you're family. To do that with each other, to do that with the world around us, we have to seek peace, to be at peace with each other. For 40 years, there's been a lot of people coming around a lot of tables. A lot of beautiful things happen around tables. Because you have had salt among yourselves. You've said, come sit down, your family. Thank you for doing that. And for the next 40 years and more, may you continue to have salt among yourselves. May you be a people who are always inviting others to the table. Not just people who are like you, but people who are different. People who look different. People who act different. People who have different opinions and ideas about politics and things like that. Have salt among yourselves. Invite them to the table because there is something greater, deeper, and stronger than all of that. And it's the reason that this has been a community for 40 years. It's because you're a community that's focused on Jesus Christ. And as long as King Jesus is at the center of your community, you'll continue on for 40, 50, 60, 70 years or more, as long as King Jesus wants you to. Let me pray for you. Jesus, thank you so much for a community of people who have been so affected by you, by your grace, your power at work in them, that they're still here and they're thriving, they're growing. And Jesus, I just pray that for the next 40 plus years that this would continue to be a place where everyone is invited to the table. Where people are invited to experience something that's not about arguments. It's not about being right or wrong. It's about finding out that they belong. And they belong because of you. That when we say God so loved the world, that we mean everybody. And that this would be a community that lets your love shine brightest, whose words are salted with your grace and your truth, whose actions are salted with your love, that through them you would do your work of redemption and reconciliation, and that whenever anybody looks at this community, that they would see you, Jesus. It's amazing that this community stretches all around the world. That there are people in all corners of this earth that have been touched, that have been blessed, that have been encouraged, that have been strengthened by this community. This is a community that started with you 2,000 years ago. So bless them. Knit them together in your love. And may they shine bright. In your name, amen.
Please stand with us and let's close with this.
Bless the Lord, oh my soul.